Hi, Kelvin. We're in this exploration about tetrionics, and specifically now with the theme of the tetrionic universe. And already we have recorded two sections on it. In the first, you said, okay, let's start with the basics. We have to discern the different dimensions between just a direction or two directions at the same time, spanning a plane, or three directions being connected, and you explained how that essentially is connected to the bosons, the photons, and the fermions. You also explained in the second part that once you understand the importance of the difference between them, you can also understand the importance of how they can be used together to evoke specific properties, basically related to the difference of energy, mass and matter, again connected to the vector, the plane, and the volume. And I've asked you to see how you can then help us understand that further, because once you had played with these models, which can be found on your website as the tetrionic templates, you realized that you had to rethink a lot. Separately, we have already talked about your understanding of the atoms. In fact, we have talked about it in a double sense, because we also talked about the change in atomic energy called radioactivity. But I'd welcome it if you could basically put that in perspective again, and then hopefully lead to an understanding of how organic and inorganic molecules can be imagined to be composed out of that same building block system.
For sure, yeah. Well, we've in the last couple discussions, and even a few more before that, as you've mentioned, we touched on, well, we've now dealt right into the idea of what is space, particularly what is matter versus what is mass, and how energy brings about all these different characteristics that we have in physics. Obviously, the main building block, apart from Planck's constant or Planck's quanta, is the tetrion. And that's why tetrionics is called tetrionics, because it's a key part in defining mass and matter and it's the key building block of the entire material side of the universe, if you like, from lowly subatomic particles right up to the stars and galaxies themselves. Now that we know the difference between mass and matter, as in matter has a volume and mass is simply the outside shell of that tetrahedral shape, and we know that these charged fascia have electric and magnetic geometries within their fields, we can see quickly from the models that you build that under the law of interaction, or the law of interaction as I term it, it's the old law of attraction, the charges, or the mass energy charges on the fascia of matter, once matter is formed, can still facilitate an interaction to bring the tetrions together to form larger particles. They do this first off at the subatomic level. They form quarks, they form electrons or leptons, and they form baryons. Now, once those basic building blocks are formed, they still have residual net charges. Plus 12 in the case of protons, zero for neutrons, minus 12 for electrons. So the second law of tetrionics is that energy in all its forms, and this includes charge, seeks equilibrium. If it's a higher energy density in one spot to another, the energy will always spread out in the form of heat or radiation to equalize that any region of space under measurement. If there is an imbalance of charges, plus 12 in one spot in the case of a proton, and minus 12 in another spot or another region of space, as in the case of the electron, those two opposite charges will seek to come together to form a neutral particle, in this case hydrogen. And that's the first of the what they call the periodic elements. In fact, tetrionics goes on to show us that hydrogen is not actually a periodic element. It's what could be best termed as a radical element. The real first element that's created comes about when hydrogen bonds with a neutron to form what's electrically called a quantum synchronous rotating converter, or as physicists and chemists call it, a deuterium nuclei. Now, I won't go and bore you with the details and the extensive ramblings about how the models in chemistry came about, but it's all documented there in the chemistry ebooks. And I'm happy to explain it at length in another discussion. But in essence, when the deuterium nuclei form, they can store and release energy in a controlled fashion. They also have, courtesy of their charged mass energy topologies, various points of plus and minus electric charges and differing north and south dipoles within their charged fascia themselves. As a result, even neutral particles, neutrons, hydrogen, deuterium, still have many plus and minus charges and magnetic dipoles with which they can interact. Again, they interact in order to form a more stable, equalized state of matter. The deuterium atoms come together as one deuterium atom, which is now on the periodic table as element one instead of hydrogen. Helium has two deuterium atoms. Carbon has six deuterium atoms, and so on. In essence, the Z number, which used to relate to the protons and electrons in any element, actually accounts for, or numbers, the number of deuterium nuclei in any periodic element. The elements, the deuterium nuclei themselves, can come together with various energy levels. Energies levels 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, upwards to 8 for the periodic elements, and they can go higher. But they come together, and when they do, they interact through these, through the geometry of the electric and magnetic fields. Now, this is the, in essence, the the external charged fascia of the deuterium topologies. And chemistry, and even QED, quantum mechanics, often refers to this additional force as the residual strong force, or the residual EM force, just to differentiate it from the charge attraction between quarks that form baryons, etc. In the case of where they form baryons as the strong force, the charged fascia are parallel and they touch each other to form a seal, if you like. The full charge, electric charge, is face to face. In the case of the residual, the electric fields of the quarks, and again, you can only see this on the models when you build them, or in the illustrations where it's indicated. In the case of a proton or a neutron, form three points around the circumference on the external topology of plus or minus electric fields. These electric fields line up. In the case of a proton, it'll have two positives and a negative. In the case of a neutron, it will have two negatives and a positive. Again, taking care to point out that neutrons are made up of positive and negative charges. They're not completely neutral, as modern theory states. Every particle in the universe has positive and negative charges. So where these three electric field apexes are formed on the baryons, they come to a point that protrudes slightly from the charged fascias. So when deuterium nuclei come together, they come together and just barely touch to each other. It's a far weaker force than the face-to-face force of the strong force. So it's got a different name for a reason. It is weaker. It's also sometimes called London forces, things like that. But this is the force that allows particles to come together, and it's the same force that was shown in the spaceflight stations, where they took salt crystals in water, shook it up in the microgravity, and they attracted each other to form larger chunks of salt crystals. A major discovery that, as they said at the time, was a huge step toward explaining how matter comes together to form bigger and bigger particles and molecules. That's how all the periodic elements and even the allotropes come together. In the case of the periodic elements, they come together according to the energy levels and the shells, K through to R, energy levels 1 through to 8, as per the illustrations in the chemistry ebook. In the case of allotropes, for example, carbon, periodic carbon has two deuterium nuclei of N1 energy levels and four deuterium nuclei at energy level 2. The two lower energies are below on a different shell compared to the second energy levels. You can also form carbon out of N1 deuterium nuclei, having six of them come together in a snowflake style pattern, a bit like a Star of David, where the deuterium nuclei, as they come together, these positive and negative quark E fields force the deuterium atoms to actually rotate, so that protons line up with next to neutrons, and you don't have any repulsion between them. You have an attraction. But those six deuterium atoms, even though it's still carbon, are all the same energy level, all on the same atomic shell. So it's an allotrope of carbon. That form is actually what's normally known as carbon 12, whereas the other one with the two energy levels and a more rigid periodic structure is actually diamond. Both are carbon for all intents and purposes, but they have vastly different shapes. When you add energy to the six N1 deuterium nuclei in carbon 12, you can raise their energy levels to N2. This has the effect, when you add up all the mass energy triangles, Planck quanta, in the charged fascia of the carbon 12 topology, to give the impression that there's more mass there than should be. And this is normally described in modern physics as a carbon 13 isotope, where the extra mass is accounted for by including the addition of an extra neutron to the 12 deuterium nuclei. This is not what's happening. There is no extra neutron. All that's happened is there's extra quanta of mass energy in the charged fascia of the matter topology. Again, words fail it in the explanation, but it's all clearly shown in the chemistry ebooks. The idea of excess neutrons in isotopes is completely wrong and should be abandoned, and the periodic table of Mendeleev should be either abandoned or replaced in favor of the tetrionic periodic table, which is based on the charged topology and energy levels of all the periodic elements. The tetrionic periodic table also shows the classical energy levels, electron configs, and the newer quantum Schrodinger numbers for each and every element possible, all 120 of them. And in fact, they're all detailed in full in the chemistry ebook as well. Now, having formed these larger elements, if you like, they're all inert, inorganic, if you like. Organic molecules come along later. They are minerals, elements, compounds, gases, things like that, but they're not what we call organic or life-bearing. We can add energy to these configs, and we raise their energy levels to give us isotopes. We can structure them in certain ways so that their energy and their structures are weak and prone to breaking, and they try and reach a lower energy level to be stable. These are the radioactive compounds in the periodic table: uranium, plutonium, onwards and upwards to element 120. But as we form compounds of various elements, we can develop silicon dioxides for rocks and granites and glass and all sorts of other materials simply by allowing these plus and minus charged fascia of element of matter topologies to come together of various elements to form compounds. And from the compounds, we can form molecules like gas or other exotic compounds of titanium, things like that. The final stage, after just adding energy to make them radioactive or to make them into isotopes of the base compounds, is to, instead of just increasing the mass energy of their matter topologies, and by this I mean, for example, if you have a proton that has 36 charged fascia and you add more and more energy or more mass to those charged fascia, you make it rise up in energy level, you make it radioactive, and you make it heavier. Because it is mass in a matter topology that gives weight. Mass in an electromagnetic field has no weight. It is weightless because it is matterless. There is no, it is only mass energy. It's a thin sheet of paper. There's no Z component, no matter. Therefore, mass energy is unaffected by gravitational fields. I know there'll be comments. I can hear them already. Photons and electromagnetic fields have mass. They are not massless. They have no matter, and they are not bent by gravitational fields because they are mass energies, not matter particles. They have no topology. By adding energy or mass energy to the topology or within the topology of any particle, you increase its mass. Its weight then accordingly changes as well in a gravitational field. If you add mass energy to an EM field, which has no matter topology, it is just a 2D field, you increase its mass again and its energy, but because it is matterless, you do not affect its weight. There is no change. It is weightless so far as gravity is concerned. This is an extremely important distinction, because now, after having added energy to the mass topologies, mass matter topologies, we've shown that we can increase the radioactivity of objects. The other way we can add mass energy to a matter topology is to apply a force, and that energy will be stored in a chem field. spelled K-E-M. It stands for kinetic electromagnetic field. And that's exactly what it is. It's only present when there is energy of motion. When you add this energy, it causes the particle to move. This gives us our kinetic energy of heat, where particles move around as you add more energy to them. The energy that you add to give kinetic energy to particles does not increase the mass or the weight of matter. It only increases the mass energy geometries of the chem field. The chem field is a secondary field, and its square root vector determines the direction that the particle will move in. Just again, like the wake on a boat. Think of a hexagonal boat in a lake. You give it a push by applying a force or energy, a wake will form in proportion to the velocity that the particle moves. That's the chem field in quantum physics, in chemistry for that matter. That's adding mass energy to its kinetic energies. But if you were to apply the energy in such a way that you created two or more, an even number, in other words, of chem fields acting in all directions from the particle would actually be stationary, because two fields pointing in opposite directions cancel out. So you have what's called an electrostatic energy, which is contained in the field of the particle. And just like the electrostatic fields we spoke of before, think of it as rays of light coming out like the sun. You see pictures of the sun with heat rays or sunlight radiating out in all directions. This is what happens if the energy you add to a particle's topology is such that you create multiple chem fields. Now, these multiple chem fields lead us into a very interesting situation. They have mass energy. They are incredibly dense. There are millions of them radiating out in all directions. They're filled with Planck quanta that can be plus or minus charges. And they contribute to the mass of the particle, as in its relativistic mass. The more energy you add, the more mass it has, but it's not affecting it the way it has been classically portrayed in relativity theory. But the exciting part about these fields with these plus and minus mass energy geometries is that they add another layer of interaction. Whereas you only had the edges of the quark electric fields to bring particles together, these EM fields around these blocks of minerals and matter, around the compounds, molecules, can, if given sufficient energy, can expand out and allow interaction with the environments further than what the London force and normal chemical bonding does. They can also store information by virtue of the fact that the ones and zeros, and you'll see this in the mathematical side of the ebook that I've done, not only do electromagnetic fields have odds and evens, bosons and photons, the electromagnetic field also, or the quanta within the electromagnetic field, the Planck quanta, are arranged so as to form a distribution of energies, what's normally called a normal distribution or a bell curve. This also hints, or is at least highly suggestive, that you can organize the arrangements of the Planck quanta within these fields as we do with ones and zeros on a hard drive. The ones and zeros in turn can bring about a whole field or hold a range, whole, what's the word I'm looking for? A whole slew of different interactions that a charge interaction by itself can't. It extends out. You may call it, instead of a EM field, some people may term it an aura. It has electric and magnetic components. It has momenta. It can be, its geometry, final geometry, is actually determined by the shape, the topology of the elements that it surrounds. So different elements and compounds and molecules will produce different EM fields that will interact differently with other particles and compounds as organisms gets larger and larger. And I believe that this third electromagnetic field of Planck quanta is what gives rise to organic life, where we have the ability to sense mass energy of light coming into a small amoeba so that it changes its direction, it reacts to it without actually being physically touched. How it can sense similar organisms close to it or far from it, how it can sense the electromagnetic field of, say, cyanide, and as it gets close, it knows to avoid it. This is the essence of what we would term our soul, our consciousness, or organic life itself. It's the electromagnetic field, and it's huge amount of statistical permutations of ones and zeros, or Planck quanta, that in turn affect whether it's an electrostatic field, whether it is a kinetic field, and how far that field spreads out from that construct of elements. So we've moved from a particle of matter that can't move on its own, has no way of doing anything except sit. We've explained how these can come together like Lego building blocks on the basis of their charges to form electrical components at the quantum level, electrical machinery that can store and retransmit energies in a controlled fashion via the quantum synchronous rotor design. How that this design then allows us to build the periodic elements and allows us to store these energies and release them in the form of, store them as mass and weight in gravitational fields, and release it as spectral colors and light and gamma rays and radioactivity, and all the radioactive particles come from this controlled release of energy via the deuterium nuclei. We've also shown how the charge, the net charge of these elements and compounds that they form, can then still seek equilibrium with surrounding compounds, and so long as they have the correct electric and magnetic fascia, they will orientate and bind in specific patterns, repeatable patterns, to form larger, more complex compounds and molecules, and how with an addition of energy from one direction can form, can give it all this motion, so that we can generate motion within these elements for mixing, for creating other elements, for bringing up to the level of Brownian motion, if you like, and how if we increase that energy and it doesn't go into the mass of the matter topologies or into the chem field, and instead creates additional chem fields, we can create an electromagnetic field around, again, compounds and molecules that will give animation or animate in organic compounds. It will breathe life into inanimate compounds and molecules. And it also allows us to store information within these fields of mass energy that exert no, they're imperceptible because the vector directions of these fields cancel out, so their vector forces are zero in the human body. Our soul or our consciousness, the electromagnetic field, however its Planck quanta are organized to make the individual, exerts no force in any particular direction on the human body. If the human body wants to move, it has to create an additional chem field in order to move. But while the human body is able to take in food and nutrients and receive sunlight for warmth, it can generate energy to maintain this third, what I call the BEM field, the bio electromagnetic field, the BEM field. The body becomes simply a battery, a chemical battery that can absorb chemicals and convert them into mass energies that maintains this BEM field, which is our soul, our consciousness. It supplies energy to the brain as well, which is the quantum processor. The brain simply receives stimuli and processes information and instructions from the BEM field, which is where our id resides. Our id, as a magnetic field, electromagnetic field, sends a signal to the brain, which is a quantum processor, which enacts our conscious thoughts, looking for the human consciousness, if you like, by scanning a brain, is equivalent to trying to figure out how MS Word is written, coded, and works by looking only at the processor of the computer that it's running on. You will get some information on the routine functioning and processing of the information, but you will never decipher, or more than likely never decipher, the code of Microsoft Word itself by looking at how the processor works, because all that information is stored, in this case, on a cloud drive called the BEM field. And that's how the human body, in a nutshell, if you like, is developed from Planck quanta, equilateral triangles of energy, into what we see now as the human creation, as well as animals all around us, life in general. Plants have electromagnetic fields. Anything that has that has the potential to store kinetic energies as a field rather than as a chem field has the potential to develop a higher form of reasoning. Was there anything else you wanted covered in that, Otto? Or anything I missed?
You know, I have an engineering background and a medical background, so when I hear you put this all together, from the simple way of putting together the building blocks of the tetrions, and how you already described that, basically you get the lines, the triangles, and the tetrahedra connect up, that you need to understand that it is all about the surfaces interacting and creating and containing little charge fields. Then you now say, basically extended the simple principle and said, well, once you have these containers for these charge fields, the classical terminology would be the grail, then this charge field between suitably set up tetrahedra, and you said that deuterium is the example for that. Basically, it's like a little gyroscope, a spinning top, which can keep itself in its position, hangs together, and the more it has its internal dynamic, the more it will be stable in itself, but also the more you can connect up by the surface charges, which sort of are like an intelligent glue. You can orient them, you can direct them, as a result of which you have different atomic elements with all different characteristics, different flavors, different filter functions, let's call it that. And then at that level, you can already see the basic of the computation taking place. That every atomic element is already a mini micro atomic quantum computer, which orients the field energies which is generated by its structure in such a way that they all can interact differently. And then you straightforward extended that. So, well, if you understand that level, that you have a tetrahedron form with a charged surface, and that charged surface can have different forms of connectednesses. There's different patterns that operate on those surfaces, which can actually store a dynamic in itself, which causes the inertias, or actually can store energies, which adds to the mass of it. Then you see that you
only when it's in the topology. The same energies in a field don't give you any weight difference, even though you've increased the mass. There's no weight gain, which is completely contrary to what they'll tell you in relativity. If you add mass to an object, it must increase its weight.
It does. It is about knowing how these triangles at the surface, once they make patterns, which you already talked about for the templates, if on the flat plane you can see that there is larger patterns, then you can also understand that the larger patterns in the shape of tetrahedra and connected tetrahedra, they will allow for a continuing flow over the surface, even if the surface is folded in a three-dimensional setting. And then, of course, you simply go on. Once you understand that, then you can understand that you can increase the dynamic, increase the information on the surface. And if you have the proper organization of the tetrahedra, then you can store so much information and activity between them that it actually flows on the surface to such an extent that it actually has the relationship of the tetrahedra being the carrier wave, but the signal wave is actually the surface flow that goes between them. And then you say, well, that's the basis of the consciousness carrying capacity of the organic dynamic with the BEM field. Evidently, I will come back to you at some point to ask more about the BEM field and the KEM field and how they interplay, because it is basically what you already mentioned, the difference between thinking in terms of energy and thinking in terms of information.
KEM and BEM fields, the easiest analogy, think of the KEM field as a boson and the BEM field as a photon, but on a much larger scale. The KEM field is like a boson. It must go in one direction, and it creates a motion. Whereas the BEM field, because it's a photon, spreads in two directions at once, which cancels it out. If you've got a fixed torch and you light the torch, even though the light's going out in both directions, the source of the light is stationary. You don't get the torch when you turn it on, doesn't push one way or the other, because you've got photons going in both directions in equal amounts. So that's why you don't feel that there is no, even though you've got energy in the field around you that makes up who you are as an individual, you can't sense it, you can't detect it, because it's overwhelmed even a basic capacity, because the heat of your body is many times denser, has much more quanta than what's in your BEM field. But the beauty of the BEM field is it's just like a computer hard drive. Whatever size it is, and I don't even know this number, but whatever size it is, it must have trillions upon trillions of ones and zeros that can be organized in so many different ways, like a hard drive. Like, our planet is covered in hard drives, all made the same way. Mm-hmm. But the ones and zeros, you end up with different photographs and different software and different operating systems on the same medium. And it just happens for the human body that medium's a BEM field. We can't see it. We can't touch it. We've got no way to interact apart from waving another field around it and disrupting it. but it's just an elegant piece of design.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, there's something I'd like to connect up to that, and that's the work of Wilhelm Reich, who basically said the equivalent of what the alchemists said, that the purpose of alchemy is to increase the frequencies, or to increase the charge, or to increase the Benfield capacity. Phil Callahan pointed to the same, that the more you exercise the Benfield, the more you can charge, you load up the capacitor, so to say.
Yeah.
But then Wilhelm Reich also said that the main function of sex is the orgasm, and the main function of the orgasm is to actually use the polarization between the male and the female so that they can each and both together build up that level, as a result of which the local electrical field connects up, which kickstarts the telepathic energy field. And then these local hard disks or these local computers form one integral network computer, and that integral network computer, that collective consciousness of humanity, is normally called God. And there are quite a number of people who realize that, experience and communicate
at
that level.
You see that happening already in twins, that they've grown up close to each other. Their fields in the early days have been, in the womb especially, have been developing up against each other, in unison with each other, developing the same patterns. And that explains the strange things that twins can sense each other and complete each other's sentences. It's because, in essence, at the earliest stages of development, they have sympathetic BEM fields that have started up in oscillation with each other and developed along that line. As they get older, maybe things change as individual traits come out.
Yeah.
But they're a classic example of taking, if you like, cloning a computer hard drive. Two bodies, you set up both hard drives the same, and then you say, okay, now you go off and have your learning experiences. And that's all I see the human body being about. It's about us being on this planet and developing our own BEM fields through our experiences and choices. And at the end of the day, human body fails, it stops, turns to dust, and our BEM field is then released to go on whatever journey it continues to go on, good or bad.
Yeah, and there's a whole extended story on that. Healers often discover that the more they are able to feel into somebody else, the more they are able to tune in and become telepathic, and the more they function as healer, the more they also start to function as psychics. And there are quite a number of people who then also realize that at the moment they're in this high switchable dynamic. First of all, they can actually feel within themselves what happens in others. I've had many experiences of that. And also, and many people have experience of that, they can get in and out of their body. They know that their BEM field is not localized in the body, but it actually takes on a quality of its own. And the mystical texts are all about that essentially the purpose of life on Earth is to realize that BEM field charge to that extent that it will actually no longer be carried by the body, but that it actually starts to carry the body, and in that way also dematerializes the body. It turns the matter into information. And that, of course, is also what you implied in your whole description, that in that sense the whole universe is a computational process.
And that it's a series of ones and zeros.
Yeah.
It's ones and zeros in the geometry of an equilateral triangle. But
and in the equilateral triangle, you actually see that it is the turning from the zero to the one, and the turning from the one to the zero.
Yep.
We need to be added to the Boolean algebra, which is included in the tetrahedron logic.
You can think of the Earth as just a creche designed to create human bodies and souls. It's the birthplace of souls in the universe by the process of the human race growing and reproducing itself. Every time a baby's born, it creates a new soul that then has the chance to go on, experience life, develop, grow, and then when the body fails, moves to a higher plane of existence by freeing itself from the human body, and then it is judged at that point whether it's worthy to be kept as part of the universe, mm-hmm. or whether it's just returned to ones and zeros again as a form of energy and fed back through the universe to, at some other stage in history, to again have the chance to be reformed. But it may not be the same, it more than likely won't be the same person. I'm not saying reincarnation, I'm just saying that energy is neither, can't be destroyed.
Yeah.
So if there was a judge, if you like, that stands at the gates above the atmosphere and says, here's a new soul, this person has just died, if it is a case of ones and zero plank triangles, they will be able to read the ones and zeros, just like we read a computer at the moment. Yeah. Judge that person, that soul, on the life experiences and either say, well, no, you go back for another go, hopefully you'll be born, you might be in another dozen bodies spread out, but that arrangement of information is not worthy to go further, or yes, it is worthy to go further and experience the next stage in life, a completely different life to what we had on Earth. But it's all about arranging positive and negative triangles of energy.
Yeah.
The entire universe, so long as you cut up enough triangles, put them into a Milo tin like I do, you've got an instant universe you can make.
Yeah. It's nice that you bring that up, because in the years that I was studying in the British Library, I picked mm-hmm. up many of the books of the old cultures, and basically they all said that this space, this reality has been created so that the gods can discover themselves, that they can see themselves, that the universe functions as a mirror, and that the creators can realize that they are creators in creation. And just this morning I was doing a recording on how in the use of freedom of choice in our body we operate our interaction of the interface with the environment, basically how we tilt the triangles to form the different relationships, and that as a result it is possible to actually have the energy field, tune the energy field, so that the origination of health is simply in the enhanced continuity of the template of origination of the body. Basically it's a fractal which creates a hologram which then repeats itself. But that disease is when decisions are taken which backfire in the system and basically cut off parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that's what you described in the how the supercharging atoms to have them go radioactive and break up on their bondings between them. And so at that level it is also that the more you tune the BEM field, the more you can also tune the chem field. And I was just asking, you said that the chem field is like the 1D, one-dimensional boson. The BEM field is like the two-dimensional photon. What is then the equivalent of the three-dimensional fermion? Is that the electromagnetic field?
That's the body. No, that's just the body itself. Three-dimensional would be matter, so that would be the physical body. The BEM field is our spirit, two-dimensional.
Yep.
The fermions are our flesh and bone, our blood. It's just three-dimensional elements all coming together to make our organic body.
Evidently, at some point, I'd like to come back to you on that.
Right.
Because one of the projects I'm working on is called Integral Healthcare. Basically, the Tetrion model of body, mind, soul, spirit, in the relationship of anatomy, physiology, the neurocrine regulation, and the consciousness level, which is basically the physical, then the chemical, then the electromagnetic, and then the photonic. And doctors have great difficulty to understand that, because they just simply are not educated in this. Doctors are still taught to think in terms of classical physics, while science has already left that behind more than a century ago. And so doctors do not see that they must look for the relativistic quantum information coherence fields in the body, but as a result they can also not see that the information in the body is what matters, because evidently the body does not operate by energies, because cells already know how to manipulate energies. As cells can take molecules, they can reshape them, they can break them, make them, and they can emit molecules. In fact, all of the body materials are created by living cells, and doctors still do not see that all of the laws of physics which they are taught and which they are taking in as if whatever they do needs to be predictable, repeatable, and so on, they apply to cadavers only. Because when you look at the living body, you see that the essence of the body is not the anatomy and beautifying the form with cosmetic surgery and so on, but that it is instead the electromagnetic field and the integrity, coherence of that. So as long as doctors do not see that, they basically take it on the wrong end of the equation, which is also the essence of integral health care, that the Western doctors, the somatic doctors, they understand the physical body. In Ayurvedic medicine, the naturopath, they understand the physiological, the chemical, the free electron body. In Chinese medicine, they understand the neurocrine electromagnetic regulation and the attunement into the environment, while the information body itself is what is addressed by the psychic doctors, the spiritual healers. And so then you can see that if you use all those forms of healing together, basically you have a body, mind, soul and spirit connected, you can work with the anatomy, the physiology, the regulatory system and the information integration system at the same time. But more importantly, you can turn that around, and you can see that when the spiritual healer rectifies the erroneous belief in a person, they will no longer interfere with the regulatory system and create neuronal and hormonal crises, either psychologically or at the organ level, as a result of which they will no longer interfere with their physiology and create, say, fever states or stagnation states in the body, which is the basis of the physical disease, as a result of which you can prevent all these physical diseases. And with what you've described now, that computational part can be made much more explicit than doctors know at the moment. So I'd really like to get into that at some point with you.
I just see doctors as still hamstrung, just like the physicists. They're basing their treatments and what they're doing on observations of what they've done, right? It's just like we have chemistry and cosmology and quantum mechanics and electrical theory. They have, as you say, the traditional, the Chinese, the holistic approaches in their results, and it's because, just like the scientists, they're working from the top down. They're looking at the observations of what has happened and what happens when they change certain parameters, what results do they get, whereas Tetrionics, because it builds from the bottom up, has to develop a very clear understanding of the mechanics that are possible and what mechanics lead to what results that we observe. As we get our heads better around the biological side of things and the psychological sort of things with our BEM fields and how information is actually stored and accessed in our brains, we're going to discover a whole new world in medicine, just like we're doing, well, just like I'm trying to do with science in general. It's yes. Because you can look from the other way and understand the mechanics that then you can say, well, electroshock's no good because we're frying the brain and the problem's not in the brain, it's actually in this BEM field. Yeah. And he's got a problem with that BEM field because he's got a cancer, a tumor on his right arm that's affecting the BEM field in a certain way. And I'm not saying that that's exactly what happens. Who knows what the exact underlying mechanisms are, but I feel that with an understanding of the underlying mechanisms of energy and mass that give rise to our bodies and our fields, we'll get huge advances in medicine, just like we're going to have huge advances in science. And it's it's through understanding.
Yes, and this is something I would like to sort of explore from either side at some point, coming up to this description of cancer, which you just presented. When you look into cancer, you can see that the cell cycle of cell replication cannot be continued for the simple reason that the cell doesn't get the synchronization pulse from the cells around it. And most often it doesn't get that pulse because at the psychological level there is a life shock which basically put the realization, the consciousness out of kilter, as a result of which there is also a stress field in the body. The electrical circuits are overtaught, overstressed, basically let's call it a bit like the equivalent of radioactive. But at the same time, at the physiological level, there is a cellular stress which leads to an acidification, too many free electrons in the body field. It's well known that cancer and chronic diseases require an acidic body. And so once you get rid of the acidity of the body, once you get rid of this electric stress level in the body, and once you get rid of this life crisis, this erroneous belief in the biofield, then all the cells need is proper nutrition, cell nutrition. And a friend of mine has been working on that to ungrow cancers in a couple of weeks. If it is metastasized, might take a couple of months. But you do need to clear out this electrical charge discharge chaotic, let's call it the electricity at a boiling point. And then the signals for cell synchronization get lost in a noise. And it would be really nice to pick that up at some point. But would it be an idea if we just close off this session for now with the perspective that we have now opened up a platform on which we can see many more significant levels in which tetrionics can be used? Because when you see that it works for the body in this way, you can also see how it works for the psyche. As a result, you can also see how it works for sociology and ecology. But maybe it's practical to round it off for now. Because in what you've done now, I asked the question of how can you place tetrionics in the cosmic perspective? And you've done a wonderful job of showing, okay, first you have to think differently. You have to understand these different roles of dimensions. And then you walked us through the way these dimensions come together in the way charges and charge discharges connect up in different patterns. Once you play with the triangles and create the tetrahedra, then out of that you can see that it is about forming patterns in which then the deuterium gyroscope spinning top is the basic element for the atomic system, and that the atomic system is ultimately the carrier for an electromagnetic charge field which we experience in our life decisions which we take. So as before, I can only compliment you with the simplicity and the streamline in which you can pull it all together. And as before, for me, this is a wonderful example of what I call science in the making. I put a question in front of you. You don't have to prepare it. You just trust in the model and your experience with it, and you unroll how it all connects up. It's really wonderful how you also used the books as a starting point, that people can follow the books while they listen to this explanation and grow into understanding the books so that they start to come to speak to them in a more direct manner.
Yeah. As a final comment, to give you some food for thought, if it turns out that what I've said is right about the BEM field just being trillions upon trillions of Planck quanta, and that's what gives rise to our consciousness and our souls, the inescapable extension of that is that the sun may well also have a consciousness of its own, as will other stars. And they in themselves could be a form of sentient life that have been around a lot longer than ourselves. Any field that has, and any material body that has an electromagnetic field that can store information in the form of Planck quanta and maintain and have an energy source to maintain that field should be able to logically evolve over time. And it's just an interesting side note to think that it could quite well be possible that the stars themselves are conscious forms of life looking down over our little planet, watching another form of life evolve and develop.
Yeah, the mystic traditions all agree on that, and part of their training is to connect to the sun so that you can actually commune with the sun. But the only way to do that is go to your solar plexus in your body, use a specific breathing technique, still the mind, connect up to the sun, and then tune into that totally different quality of consciousness which is carried there. Which of course is also explicitly described in the Egyptian Amun Aton sun tradition. And Heinlein, in his book The Whipping Star, for example, is one of many who knew that tradition and said, well, once you connect up to the stars, you realize that all of them connect to each other. And when I was working in England with psychics, one of the things I used to do with people is have them connect up from their body through specific connection point through the top of the head, connecting it to the star, from the solar plexus connecting it to the sun, from the feet connecting it to the earth, and then being able to tune in these different levels as networks of consciousness. And actually, when you look in the brain, it is funny that the astrocytes are the ones where, say, consciousness is supposed to be carried in the brain, and that, of course, is actually literally means the star cells. So what you said, from what you inferred from Tetrionics, from what I have found and worked with, that is indeed how it works. There is consciousness in basically the whole universe, but the only way to get to it is to be able to tune your own BEM field so that you can go from your internal processing to the telepathic processing, which is also what Wilhelm Reich was talking about. Use the orgasmic energy to realize that we are all telepathically connected. That's not just the radio, the electric field in the body, but also the radio field around us, which forms one system. And then you can see that the suns and the stars, they all do the same.
Yeah.
Excellent food for thought, and a wonderful starting point for many further explorations.
For sure.
Yeah, but thank you very much for telling your story in this straightforward manner again. And I look forward to further exploration conversations as we are doing now. And I'll just close off the recording for now.
Okay.
Thank you very much.